to have to start over.
Sorry.
No, you had it right. It was me. Welcome to the Token CEO podcast. It is Thursday, May 13th. This is episode 153 of our show. We are presented by Sports Research. I'm sitting in an office right now. I have vowed to myself that I'm going to go for a run today. So shout out to everybody in the run club. What I love about Sports Research is that Sports Research has my back. I actually had this awesome girl on Instagram yesterday showing how she got a free stick of sweet sweat because she put in code NRC at sportsresearch.com. But what I mean by Sports Research having my back is they've got vitamins, they've got collagen, they've got an at-home workout kit. This stuff works for UFC fighters and NFL players. It also works for lowly CEOs and great runners and women on the internet. If you go to sportsresearch.com and use code NRC, you can get a free stick of Sweet Sweat. What Sweet Sweat does is it helps you target your troubled areas. It enables you to rub a little sweet smelling something on them. It improves circulation. It aids in recovery, and it leaves you dripping in sweat. Who doesn't want to be dripping in sweat? I actually love to sweat. I never sweat enough. Love it. It's a great feeling. Anyways, if you're not into sweating or you're not into a free stick of Sweet Sweat, you can go to sportsresearch.com and use code TOKEN for 30% off your order. We have an awesome episode today. We've got Shelly Bell joining us. Shelly is the CEO of Black Girl Ventures. She's got an awesome personal story. She was fired from her job at 34. She was a teen mom. She took all of the things that were happening in her life and all of the things she observed in the women around her. And she created a venture fund that helps support women of color in their efforts to create, run, and be successful in their own businesses. Before we get into Shelly, we took some questions from our Facebook group. So shout out to the Token CEO Facebook group. If you've got business related questions, you want to talk about your career, you want to network with other people, or you're interested in a mentor, our Facebook group, I think, is pretty awesome. So shout out to Ash and Ash and all the people who run that. And obviously everyone in there talking about stuff. It's been actually really awesome to see how many people as part of that group have gotten new jobs. I was DMing with someone last night, a woman named Caitlin, and we were talking about how she should negotiate for her salary as she's looking to interview and land a job at a new company. So anyways, lots of good stuff going on there. And before we get into Shelly, we'll just go through some key questions coming from the group. All right. So the first question is, if you're offered a position but are still interviewing with another company for another role, what's the best way to tell the first company that you're interviewing for another role without sounding ungrateful and not wanting to lose that offer? So first of all, congratulations, whoever sent this in is in high demand, which is awesome. I think it's stressful, certainly, but what a great compliment to who you are and what you're doing is that you have multiple people who want you to go work for them. So you're doing something right. What I might recommend in this scenario is first, you got to tell the first company that you are talking to other companies. And I think you can say that in a way that basically says, hey, there's a couple other companies who have reached out regarding similar roles, if they're similar, or who are offering other types of roles. I want to hear them out in terms of what the opportunities might be. I think it's important to stress that you really like the opportunity at company one and that you're very, very interested and that you promise to be very communicative and stay in touch as you move forward in choosing what your next role will be. So the first thing always is to thank someone for the opportunity. The second is to just be clear about it, which is, hey, I have a few other prospects that I'm talking to. I want to be sure to see those conversations through. And then three is to, if you can, get to a sense of timing in terms of like, I expect to have a better answer by this time. And then also to ask the hiring manager of company one, how does that work with your timing? Because ultimately, if the timing isn't congruent, you may have to make a choice without making a choice. And if the timing is congruent, then you should have multiple offers to choose from. Okay, what's the most tactful way to turn down a job offer respectfully? God, people are so successful in the Instagram DMs on the Facebook group. So I think the best way to turn down a job is to thank the company/hiring manager, not profusely, but you don't have to go above and beyond, but you should be very gracious and grateful. Thank you so much for extending me this offer. I would then say, here's five things that I really love about your company or this opportunity, or maybe it's only two things, but you should say why you liked that company in the first place and why you really considered that offer. I think the next thing to say is, you know, I've made the decision to take a different path. I'm going to pursue something that is going to enable me to do blah, blah, blah. I did Greg Coleman's NYU class the other night, and he was giving me shit because he offered me a job at BuzzFeed and I didn't take it to go do something else. And what was actually cool about it is that could have been a contentious conversation or reminder with Greg. But when that happened, you know, I was interested in BuzzFeed. There was a bunch of things I liked about BuzzFeed. There was a bunch of things that weren't the right fit for me there. I was very clear about it. I was like, I love being considered for this opportunity. It would be a great honor to work with you. I'm very excited for all the things that you're going to be doing, but I think my path is going to take me into a different place, and I'm more interested in an opportunity. In my case, it was with a startup. So I think so long as you say something like that, you'll leave in good hands and on good terms, and you never know when that door might open again. Okay, so the next one is tips for being a great remote manager. I remember I worked for Microsoft. I was living in Boston, and I had a bunch of people who worked for me all over the world. One was in Tokyo. There was a couple of people in London. There were some people in Seattle. It was really hard for me. Like, it was a huge, huge learning experience. It was very frustrating. The time zones, the dial-in numbers, the world wasn't Zoomable the way it is now. It was a lot of work to stay connected. I think the best thing you can do as a remote manager is to be very, very communicative. And you've got to figure out how people want to communicate. Some people like to be on Zoom and have a very dedicated time for one-on-ones. Other people just want to talk over text message or Slack or GChat or whatever the mechanism may be. So I think the best thing you can do as a remote manager is, one, you've got to be really organized. You've got to understand what someone is doing, what they should be doing, why they're doing it, and what you expect from them, and vice versa, because you're not going to have eyes on them every day. So you've got to be really clear about what your expectations are, what your hopes are, what you are not comfortable with, what you are excited about. Like, you guys got to get on the same page about that. And then I think the second piece of it is you want to stay connected even though you're not in the same room all the time. That could be via video, that could be via phone, that could be via text, as I'd mentioned. And then the last thing is you want to make it a priority to have an ongoing touch base with that person in person. So whether they're flying to you or driving to you, or you're flying to them or driving to them. And that's what my advice would be. This question is, this person had an interview on a Monday. The hiring manager told that person they would be back to them by the end of the week, let's say, or by a certain date. We are like 5 days past the date, and the person is wondering what they do next. This happens all the time. I have one of these. I told somebody I would get back to them last Monday. It's Wednesday. I still haven't gotten back to them. So the first thing is, just because a hiring manager hasn't gotten back to you or someone hasn't gotten back to you doesn't necessarily mean that they're not interested in you. It just means that they have a lot going on. I think the second thing is you want to think about when and how to reach out. You don't want to be overbearing. You don't want to be forgotten about. So I think it's a balance of, you know, hey, if it's been a week and a half, it's totally cool to write that person and say, hey, you'd mentioned I would hear from you. I just wanted to check in. I was thinking more about blah, blah, blah. And here's two other ideas for your business. Look forward to hearing from you soon. You can't be afraid to follow up. I mean, we had Rear Admiral on here. I think Rear Admiral wrote Dave about having a job here for like 7 years. So that's a little bit of an extreme example, but not being afraid to follow up is really important. Being cognizant that the person you are reaching out to may have a lot of other things going on, that's also important. And then finally, you know, your time is your time, your career is your career. So at some point, if you get sick of waiting, then you should move on. And only you can make the determination of how much you want that job or how much you're interested in doing that particular thing or working in that particular place. And you may want to keep trying and you may not want to keep trying. And that's your choice and that's their loss if they didn't have their shit together to get back to you. Okay, so I came home the other day and Tuca and Beef were going bananas. Like Beef is like drooling everywhere. Tuca has like a very high-pitched bark. It's not the best bark for a large dog. It's actually very off-brand. But anyways, he's barking like crazy. Beef is drooling everywhere because there's a guy in my driveway delivering two huge boxes. The two boxes were from Light Boxer. Light Boxer, I just set it up myself. It's awesome. It's basically an at-home boxing workout. It's fueled by music. It's got a super easy-to-use display. It's not hard to set up. I used to box at a boxing gym in New York with my friend Rika. It was amazing, but it was like dirty and it was intimidating and I didn't really know what I was doing and no one bothered to explain it. The awesome thing about Light Boxer is you can get a killer boxing workout. You can do it in the comfort of your own home. They've got great music. They've got my guy Justin Bieber on there, which I love. And it tells you where and how to punch, which enables you to get a better workout and a better overall experience from using your Light Boxer. So go to lightboxer.com, use code TOKEN, and you get $100 off your order. It's an awesome at-home workout product. Before we get into Shelly, let's just talk for a second about New Balance. I love New Balance. New Balance has partnered with us to talk about embracing the suck. What's incredible about New Balance is that they are committed to mental health and they are finding ways through their products, whether it's running tights, whether it's sneakers, gear, you name it, they're helping people get out there and be at their best because they're helping them embrace the bad moments. There's a ton of bad moments happening. There's also a ton of great moments happening. And what's great about exercise and fitness is it releases all of those endorphins and helps you feel better and more in control about where you are. I've been running more. I love it. I'm trying to get better at it. And I think one of the great things, you know, about New Balance is their commitment to mental health at large, but also the recognition that you can embrace the suck in a lot of ways. You can do it in the office, you can do it in your friendships, you can do it in your personal life, you can do it in your business, and you can do it in the businesses that you help, just like Shelly. So go to newbalance.com if you want to check out all of their gear, high quality American company. They're doing great stuff. And if you feel like you're in a sucky moment, get out there and embrace it.
Shelly Bell here on the Token CEO podcast. You are amazing. I think your life story is fascinating. And I think what you're doing is obviously so important. But give us the Shelly story. Give us the 101.
Okay. Oh my goodness. So thank you for having me. I've lived a lot of lives. I was a K-12 teacher for a while. I'm a computer scientist. I worked at a patent and trademark office for a little bit. I sold vacuum cleaners in college. At one point I called myself a private eye. I've done a lot. There you go. And so actually selling vacuum cleaners is probably some of the most valuable experience that I've had because you have to walk up to someone's door, get them to let you in their house to show you something they already own, to show them something they already own. Right. And so the power of that actually prepared me for fundraising, I would say.
Yep. Yep. Okay. Give me the vacuum cleaner pitch. Like, do you remember the pitch?
Oh, Lord. No.
I don't remember. To let you in their house.
I do not remember the pitch. I know one of the things that the person that trained me would say is all of these other vacuum cleaner companies are trying to sell you on the vacuum cleaner doing everything except what it's supposed to do. Vacuum. Let me show you how well it vacuums, right? But because, you know, a lot of times we're like, let me show you this attachment. Let me show you how it.
Sure. It's got the filter and the hose.
Yeah. Let me show you how it shampoos. Let me show you how it has a shampoo companion, you know, like all these things.
Fuck that. Let me show you how this thing sucks up dirt.
Simple. That's what you want, right? You want a vacuum to do its best job at vacuuming. Okay, so let me show you that, right?
Yeah.
And it would be like, and the people would be like, oh.
Right.
Yeah.
I need a new vacuum cleaner.
Right.
All right. Okay, so flash forward to now.
Probably about, let's see. I launched Black Girl Ventures in 2017. What sparked me to do it was I got laid off twice. And I said, you know what? I'm going to start a business. Like, that was my, I didn't want to go work for anybody else. I didn't like the idea of somebody being able to tell me, oh, okay, based off of what you've been doing for the last 3 years, you're worth 75K. Like, you don't get to tell me that. I also did not, like, the idea of being able to kind of, like, let me go, you know, or release me based off of whatever you thought, you know, I didn't like that idea. And I'm not saying it's bad to be an employee, because I think that, like, working in a company that lets you be who you are is important. And if you feel like you're doing the work that you want to do in the world, that's important. So,
you know, I'm going to interrupt you, but I think you're right that, like, getting laid off is very hurtful. Like, it sucks. It, like, bruises your ego. You are like, I'm going to be in control of my destiny. And you decided to go create your destiny, which is frankly helping entrepreneurs create their own businesses. But give a little bit, talk a little bit about why that was, you know, we have a lot of listeners who are early in their career or finding their way through their careers. A lot of them probably have been laid off. This was a horrible year because many, many people got laid off. Like, talk a little bit about that experience.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the best bosses that I've had called me in and said, I think you're amazing, but this is not for you. And he gave me a decent package, but I was devastated. I did the only thing that a person who's gotten laid off twice could possibly do. I went home and I called California psychics. And I said, what
are you supposed to do?
What is happening with my life, right?
What did the California psychics say?
Okay. And the psychic said, when you find a thing that you want to do, the money will come. Oh, and you're not going to get married to that guy that you're engaged to.
Okay, good to know.
So my life literally flipped upside down. And I was like, what am I going to do? And I just started pulling for skills, like, or just started using my ingenuity. What could I think up? The first thing I did was I built a teepee in my living room. Now, I do have Native American roots, but I'm not necessarily, you know, digging it up and calling it all out. But I do, my family. And I was inspired to try this. I was like, well, let's try this. Everybody thought I was crazy. People were like, nobody's going to sleep in your living room in the teepee. And I said, okay, yes, they will. Watch. Now, this is before any of the kid teepees that hit the market. Like, now you can go to Target and buy a kid teepee. That wasn't there yet. So I'm at Home Depot. I'm grabbing the wood. And I didn't even know how to drill a hole. Okay, so if you're out there and you have changed careers a bunch of times, or you've gotten laid off and you're trying to figure out what to do, all I knew was I had to do something.
Yep.
Right. I couldn't just not do anything. So you're I'm like, drilling.
Teepees it is.
So the people, they're like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm going to build a teepee, put it in my living room and rent it out. And they're like, nobody's going to sleep in your living room with teepee. And I'm like, yes, they will. So Airbnb has a teepee option. So I put it up on Airbnb. Now, so many people that want to come and sleep in it, I actually had to shut it down. I let one woman come and sleep in it. And I quickly found out that I don't want people sleeping in my living room in a teepee.
Okay.
And so I had to pivot. But my thought was, how could I create a safe space for women traveling? My thought was also, how can I create a space where if you're a single parent and you can't make money off of Airbnb, or you're someone who doesn't have an extra room, how could you potentially make money off of Airbnb? And so those are all of my thoughts, really.
Okay.
Still thinking about equity, still thinking about safety. But I learned then that safe space means safe people. Mm-hmm. So as much as I wanted to provide a safe space for this woman, she was going through some things. She's in my living room, so I can't avoid her. Like, my kids
living together.
Yeah, she's talking to my kids. I'm like, Laura, you got to go. But yeah, she was a really great woman. So if she hears this, I don't
know. Yeah. Loved great, having you.
Right, right. She's a great person, you know.
Just better off not living together.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. And so I was like, you know what? This CP thing is going to take a little bit longer to kick off. I need to move. I can't. I'm going to have to wait on this one. So the previous job, I learned how to do t-shirts, how to print t-shirts. And so I launched a t-shirt line. The first one was the LGBT line. It sucked. Nobody bought it. It bombed. I was like, oh no. And I was on the phone with a printer at the time. And I said, you know what? It's made by a Black woman. I should put that on a shirt. And so I literally went to the computer, designed a Made by Black Women logo to pattern after the Made in America logo.
Yep.
Put it on a shirt. Everybody loved it. My mom gave me her some of her retirement money to actually launch the company. And then I used my tax return to buy my own machines.
Okay.
So I think that like one of the steps when you're in between or career switching or just wondering like what to do next is to do your own fact finding, your own experimenting, and your own proving to yourself first. Because it's really what I had done through kind of like letting go, pivoting, moving here. It's like, I'm trying to find what my fact of entrepreneurship looks like. What is my fact of revenue, my fact of finances? Like, what does that mean for me, right? And in the realm of the truths that exists, what was going to be the truth for me on my journey about what I could do?
Yeah.
So after I did a couple runs of the t-shirts, I said, you know what? I'm going to launch my own print shop. So I launched a print shop too. So in the background, I'm printing for other people to make more money. And on the front end, I'm advertising and my own t-shirt
line. Yep, got it.
There you go.
Yep, love.
So I'm doing, and everything is taking off. I started landing through networking and relationship building, which I found is the key, building relationships. I landed deals with like Amazon and Google. So I started doing orders for different employees there. And then the news came out. Black women received starting businesses at 6 times the national average, yet receiving less than 1% of venture capital. And I had already had like a bit of a brand from, I've done like performance poetry and community organizing, like while I was working other jobs. And so I was like, hey, well, let's just pull some people together, throw some money in a hat and give it away. And that's literally what it was.
All right.
The first Black Girl Ventures pitch competition was a brunch in a house in Southeast DC. We all got together. I cooked all the food myself, which I vowed to never do again. And we, 4 women got up, talked about their business. I ran the whole thing like a poetry slam. Sure. Because that's what I do.
That's what it is.
That's right. And so the audience gave feedback. And I'm like, oh, this is cool to have like the audience. Because if you think about like traditional pitch competitions, we're kind of mirroring the problem, right? Which is like less than 1% of the room. So you got 200 people in the room, but only 4 people get to talk.
Yeah, that's right. But ask the 4 white guys if they want our business.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Right? Well, there's this room for the customers. And so we started out, having those smaller events and letting anybody in the audience who wanted to ask questions ask. And then as we grew, we moved to having what we call champions, not judges, but they still are not the decision makers. The entire audience gets to decide. So the way it works is like Shark Tank meets Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Right. So women pitch and then the audience actually votes with their dollars to fund the business that they like best.
Yep.
And then we grant that capital back out to those founders. So you're making a donation to Black Girl Ventures, which is a tax write-off. You could
sure, and then in return, Black Girl Ventures is supporting.
And then we grant out to the founders. Even from like a diversity standpoint, though, when we started out, we were like Black women pitching to Black women. And I'm like, hey, that's not going to get us available money that can move things forward. And I think that, well, I do think that like ERGs and certain like affinity groups are important. There is an element where when you're in an ERG, you're already in an environment that doesn't may or may not feel as diverse, or you're already constantly integrating. But in entrepreneurship, a lot of times you're by yourself. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to create an environment where people could network and also to signal to the community that like you can come, because people would see Black Girl Ventures and say, oh, that must be for Black people. And they wouldn't think that like, one, we're serving Black and Brown people, but two, they're like, oh, that's not for me to be there. So I created a tagline that says, everyone can attend, but Black and Brown women will win. Awesome. And then we moved it into a WeWork.
Wait, did you make that a t-shirt?
I didn't make that a t-shirt. What a missed opportunity, Erica.
The choice of a t-shirt or a teepee.
Yeah.
Make it into a t-shirt. I'd wear that t-shirt.
I'm going to have to, let me do that. Listen, don't get me started. We'll have a whole t-shirt line, okay?
I'll make a t-shirt line with you. All right, so keep going. So you're like, hey, we are inclusive. Let's not just be talking to ourselves, but let's keep our eye on the prize. And Black and Brown women are going to crush this thing. That's who we're here to help. Anyone can be a part. We're going to help Black and brown women who are creating businesses. How many have you helped?
So far, we have funded over 130 women founders. We have, we're across about 12 cities right now. We are the largest entrepreneur support organization for Black and brown women on the East Coast. Our founders represent about $10 million in revenue and about 3,000 jobs.
Amazing. And you work with Google, I think. You work with like the big wigs. So you're now out, like, are you just like hoity-toity out in San Francisco? And they're like, here comes Shelly. Like how does that work?
I mean, so we work with Nike. We work with Kroger. We work with Visa. We work with, we don't work with Google as much as we used to, but we do work with Google. Our Nike engagement is probably the biggest in our Visa engagement. So we're helping Nike, Visa, Kroger, but also we work with like Jane Walker by Johnny Walker. So we work with them for New York. We've worked with like Diageo. There's some really great brands. Warby Parker, which is one of my favorite teams to work with. And honestly, it's just been being very authentic, and they have really just opened up and allowed me the space to do what I'm doing for my community and been a partner with that.
And so Shelly, when you're working with Nike, or you're working with Jane Walker, or you're working with Warby Parker, are they interested in particular types of women or particular types of entrepreneurs or particular sectors? Are they like, Shelly, you're an awesome cause. We want to help Black and brown women. Here's some cash. Like, how does that work?
Yeah, great question. It's a little bit of both depending on who the sponsor or partners that comes to us. But I would say for Nike in particular, we ran a pitch competition tournament. So we have multiple engagements with them because my strategy is always to like embed myself within a company and then kind of stretch out. So I usually work with different arms of a company. So on their foundation side, we're focused on a 9-month fellowship in Chicago that helps move women from not just being business owners, but business leaders. Because the power of what it means to move the needle locally means that we need other voices at the table. And so helping women understand like how they navigate and how to help other women navigate was important there. We also are doing murals across 3 cities to lament and showcase and bring out, also helping with the resurgence of artists and helping bring out the idea of like what it means to be a Black woman entrepreneur, right? And like putting other, like I love the story of Madam CJ Walker, and I'm so grateful for her and what she has done, you know, in the past, which is, you know, breeds people like me. At the same time, I also want people like me to be a part of history, right? And like really take that place. So we're going to use these murals to communicate that. And then with the business side, we did a couple engagements where we had the tournament style pitch competition where we had 8 women go through several rounds of pitching where we had elimination. We brought in like some amazing folks to be the champions. Renee Montgomery, who's the co-owner of the Atlanta Dream. Melanie Harris was the VP of development at Nike. And they came in and they judged. They were the champions. I'll say they didn't judge. And then we opened it up to an audience vote. So saying all that to say, briefly, to be a part of Black Girl Ventures in the pitch competition, you have to be at least a year in business and you have to be revenue generating.
Okay.
Now we're in terms of our communities, we're open to people being a part of the community, but if you're pitching, you're at least a year in business and you are revenue generating.
That's a business company.
That's right. That's right. And you, for the partners, for Nike, we did people in sports and health, wellness, and tech. For Afro Sheen, we did people in beauty. For Rare Beauty Brands and Ulta Beauty, we did a clean beauty competition.
Totally.
Where the person who won actually got an opportunity to sell on ultabeauty.com. So it's a mix of like the niche or the industry verticals, which opens up opportunities for supplier diversity.
Yep. Totally makes sense. I love that. Okay. So Shelly, before I let you go on this, because I love what you're doing, because I think that what's so interesting is that you clearly are a woman who's not defined by anything, nor limited, nor you do not let yourself be limited. I think one of the biggest lessons that can apply to anyone is like, shit, you get laid off. your world's crashing around you. You don't feel good. You know what? It's okay to be weird. It's okay to come up with a harebrained idea of like, hey, I'm going to let strangers live in my house with my kids in a teepee that I built myself. And I don't know how to build teepees. Like, there's an ingenuity and magic to you that I think everybody has inside of them and they could bring to life. I think the second thing that's awesome about you is that, you know, you're to your point, you're a computer scientist, you're an entrepreneur, you're an investor, you are a personality, you are a theater rat, right? With all these things, you got to amalgamate all of those. You know, those are great skills to go apply to the money business. Like, I think one of the things that's so hard for women sometimes is that you get intimidated to touch money, be involved in investing. You know, I would be like, I know nothing about investing. I'm not qualified to know anything about investing. And you're like, if you've sold vacuum cleaners, you could be good at investing. Like, it's the core skill. So I think that's something for everyone. And then I think the third piece is, you know, one of the things I hate about the world right now is it's almost getting so much smaller and so insular. And what I love about what you're doing is you're like, hey, let's just not talk to one another. Let's keep our focus on helping, you know, less than 1% of venture money going to women who are Black or Brown is pathetic. Like, it's, that's just pathetic. And, but you're like, hey, it takes a village. So anybody's welcome. Guys are welcome. White people are welcome. You can be any color, any creed, whatever. Like, you got money and you want to put it to a woman, like, let's go. Like, so I think that that's also really important, is that you can have a message that is about an inclusive message while still supporting something exclusively. And I think a lot of people get tripped up and lost there because they're like, ooh, am I inclusive or am I exclusive? And I think you can be both. I love that. What's next for you?
World domination.
Love it. Let's go.
So we're looking at going global. We're looking at going global. We're looking at just more expansion. We're looking at more partners, multi-year partners that we're looking for. My goal this year was just to raise $10 million. Like, that was my goal this year. And so I'm working toward that right now, but that, you know, I'm getting there and I'm still moving toward that goal. We want like multi-year sustainability for Black Girl Ventures, because the more sustainable we are, we believe the more sustainable communities are. Like, my vision is big. I built a tech platform to handle the voting and the donating. And I want to expand that platform to be used by multiple incubators and accelerators across the world to be able to also figure another way to get capital to their founders as well.
You know what else I think is cool, which this is like a whole different conversation for a different day, but one of the things that I'm noticing, so we have a podcast here, $1 million Worth of Game. I don't know if you know Wallow and Billy, but like, they're awesome. Okay. They're my favorite podcast here. And they're two Black men from Philly, and getting mainstream brands who are all saying, we want to help the Black community. We want to help the Black community. We want to help the Black community. But when it comes down to it, they're like, but we don't know how, and we don't know what to say, and we don't know how to engage, or we don't know the right language. Like, and it's really interesting. You know, what I love about our partnership with Wallow and Gilly is that, like, they're bringing stuff to our world. We're bringing stuff to their world. It's just like this whole mashup of weird people. But I also really love that what you're doing is making it easy and fun and empowering and clear on, like, this is how you engage to help. And I think that that's just really unique. And I don't think there's enough people doing that. And I think if more people were like you, which clearly is not going to happen, it would bridge this divide in a way where you would get to 5%, you know, or 7% or 10% or 50% in terms of investing and brands being able to participate, being comfortable doing so, you know? All right. So Shelly, I know I only have 3 minutes with you. Give us where we find you, how we get to you. How do people support Black Girl Ventures? Like, give us the vacuum cleaner pitch on that.
Yeah. So, you know, Black Girl Ventures focuses on community capacity and capital for Black and Brown women founders. You can find us at www.blackgirlventures.org, at Black Girl Ventures on Instagram, at B Girl Ventures on Twitter. And you can follow me at I Am Shelly Bell everywhere.
All right, Shelly Bell, thank you so much. I'm going to follow up with you. I'm going
to
come.
All right, I look forward to it.
Slams. All right. All right, girl. Bye.
So before I let you go, we always do our one fucking good thing. One fucking good thing is brought to you by High Noon. We love High Noon. They've got a bunch of new tropical flavors. So if you have had it or are satiated with the peach and the pineapple and the black cherry, you can try a whole host of new flavors, including mango, which is my favorite. High Noon is 100 calories. It tastes great. It's real juice, vodka, and a little bit of seltzer water. Perfect combination. So if you're looking for a great drink this spring, you want to celebrate the weekend coming up, get a High Noon, try the new tropical flavors. You can get them in a 4-pack or an 8-pack. So now that we've told you why High Noon is great, we're going to kick it to Jeff and Eddie for our one fucking good thing.
All right. It's just me. It's just Jeff. Eddie's the busiest man alive in the world. But my one fucking good thing of the week is the Dozen Trivia Tournament finally started, albeit with a little chaos, because after weeks and months of prep and fine-tooth comb perfecting everything, I did screw up the first match. But now it means people get an extra match. We'll have another one now with Dave, Eddie, who's not here, and Clem. But otherwise, it is a very good thing, because I feel like everyone at the company is now involved with trivia. And I'm happy to see that, because now this is kind of like everybody's thing. Trivia is my thing, but I now think when you think about trivia and Barstool, you think about everyone. Chicago guys, Brandon, PFT, Fran, doesn't matter who it is. It's like the company show, and I think that's pretty damn cool. So I'm very excited that it's finally going, and people are enjoying it, and there's so many more matches to come, weeks more matches to come. You can find the Dozen every night live and on demand when it's over, 7-6 Central, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and most importantly, BarstoolSports.com. You can find it all there.
So that's it for today's episode. Huge thanks to Shelly for joining us. And as always, a thank you to everybody in the Facebook group for offering us questions and giving us thoughts. If you haven't already, subscribe to the podcast, leave us a rating, or give us a review. I'm at EKA Nardini. Token CEO is on TikTok, LinkedIn, and YouTube. And we'll see you back here on Tuesday.